You'll know someone who has experienced breast cancer. You may have had it yourself. And while the initial diagnosis will always be a terrible shock, there's good news about improving survival rates. Leading breast cancer expert Professor John Boyages says death rates have reduced by at least 35% in Australia and the UK in just over 20 years. The vast majority of women will survive breast cancer. But the process of diagnosis, treatment and recovery is still a pretty difficult and confusing path, with many decisions to be made along the way that could affect your prognosis. Professor Boyages provides practical advice on this in a new book called Breast Cancer, Taking Control, and he's with me in the Knife Matter studio. Welcome.
Good morning.
Let's start with the good news, the improvements and the reasons for them. What's happened? Why do we think it has?
It's great that Australia is leading the way, and we're very lucky in Australia. We've got a fantastic screening program. We've got, in fact, good media that promotes breast awareness. You know, believe it or not, that doesn't happen in a lot of places. And we've got very good surgeons and doctors, and supported by breast care nurses as well.
Right. Because I think we're now at a five-year survival rate. It's something like, it's more than 88%, isn't it?
It is, and that's the average. And if you find, if a woman finds a very small cancer with mammography, for example, and hasn't spread to her glands, it can be as high as 95-99%. So one of the key messages is early detection, of course,
yes.
And people particularly over the age of 50 to have a breast screen. We've got a great, you know, free national program every 2 years in Australia. In England, it's every 3 years,
yeah. For
example, because of costs.
Is this the mammogram?
Yes.
This is the thing that all women I know say is particularly unpleasant.
Yes, and invented by a male.
Yes. Now, what about young women and breast cancer? Is that becoming more common, or are we just hearing more about it?
Look, when Kylie Minogue was diagnosed, I looked at statistics for the last 30 years, and the rate of breast cancer in young women has stayed basically flat. Our population is growing, so we're seeing more younger women with breast cancer, but the reality is only 15% of all our breast cancer cases occur under the age of 40. Now, having said that, I have seen, you know, an 18-year-old breast cancer treated a 21-year-old last year, and it's, you know, it's shocking when you see somebody that young. It's just, you know, it's heart-wrenching, and to, you know, sit there and guide someone like that through this nightmare.
Mm. You identify a series of what you call control points, and there are 20 of them, actually.
Jeez.
And these are the stages and decisions you need to make along the way from diagnosis through to recovery. You clearly need to be very well informed and ask a lot of questions.
Yes, and I think it's, you know, when you're diagnosed with breast cancer, you sort of get this mountain sort of lands in your path. And you know, I've seen it so many times, your life stops, family dynamics changes, work dynamics. You know, you think you're going to die next week. You're not going to see your grandkids. And it's an awful feeling, and you totally lose control. And in that vulnerable time, sometimes wrong decisions get made. And that's why the first two control points are in red. I've done it deliberately to say, look, stop. That's the most difficult time. Slow down. First thing is take a deep breath. Tell your family. Find the right treatment team. You know, I see a lot of young women with children haven't even told the children.
Yeah.
And you know, the husband and wife may be crying in the lounge room. The kids think they're going through a divorce. The kids, you know, children are very intuitive. They know something's wrong. And you know, I advise in the book how to break news to your children.
Yeah. You suggest that children should be told, but in a sensitive way.
Yes, yes. And the way you talk to children varies by their age, and a lot of families, as is natural, is to protect your children.
Yes, yes.
And you think you're protecting them.
No, you can't.
And you know, there's a story in here, you know, the hardest situation I've ever been in as a doctor is when a young lady I was treating with advanced breast cancer didn't tell her children until about 4 weeks before she died, and went to work with wigs and makeup, and you know, everything went on as normal.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was I sat there and my trainee was in tears and trying to convince her to at least write a letter to each of her children rather than you know, she's there 1 minute, gone the next.
Yes, indeed. You use a lot of garden analogies in the book.
Yes.
The breast is a rose bush in the garden, the cancer is a weed growing under it. How does it help to see things that way?
Look, as you get older and greyer, you try different things as a doctor. Mm. And, I treat a lot of women from a non-speaking background.
Mm-hmm.
And I find the way I connect with patients from that background and any background is ask about their family and who's at home with you. And I think when I teach medical students, I say, look, don't go in there and ask about how long your lump has been there. Find out about them as a person first and what they do. And the garden, everybody understands the garden.
Yeah.
And when I say, look, pretend I'm the weed mat giving the radiotherapy, you know, I can say, what do I need radiation for? Well, you know, the garden, there's some seeds there. When you remove it, the soil looks clear, doesn't it?
Mm.
But if you put a weed mat down or weed mulch, it reduces the chance of coming back there. And then you just keep going on further.
Yeah. I see the sense of it. Yeah. Now, we were talking just before about these 20 control points in the first two are in red. And you say the first 3 months are critical for your long-term prognosis because the choices you make then can affect the risk of the cancer coming back. It is understandable, though, and a completely human response that if you get a diagnosis of breast cancer that you want to move really quickly. How do you kind of temper that?
Exactly. It's the natural instinct is, working in Oxford at the moment, they've got this crazy rule, you've got to be seen within 2 weeks and treated within 4 weeks. And they're making decisions based on time rather than the needs of the patient. Okay, and
I can see. I mean, you can see where that's coming. Obviously,
course,
you can.
Yeah.
And you were talking before about early detection.
Mm.
Early detection's obviously so critical.
Yes.
But what follows from that, from the layperson's perspective, is early intervention as well.
Yes. Well, that's right. But, you know, the reality is this cancer's probably been forming over 12 to 24 months. An extra 2 weeks is not going to do any harm. And you know, I often tell the story. In April, I was in Melbourne. I was in the back of a cab. The phone starts ringing. And a doctor from another hospital saying, look, I've heard your name. My brother's such and such in this rural town. His receptionist is going to have a mastectomy tomorrow. And I just don't feel right about it. I know nothing about breast cancer, but I just don't feel right about that. So I ring the lady up and get her up to, you know, centre at Westmead, and she had a tiny marble-sized cancer that didn't need a mastectomy. And you think that's the danger, that sometimes we're driven by an operating schedule or you do feel vulnerable as a patient. You know, you're in the you feel vulnerable and you can quickly move to a decision. And I guess the orange part of the book is to say, look, these are the critical things, you know, the caution part. You know, talk to your surgeon about reconstruction. Talk to them about prostheses. Talk to them about how do I get ready for hospital? The whole book, you know, sometimes people go into hospital, there's a rush to get people into hospital out again.
Yes, you
know,
indeed.
And we don't, you know, tell them, you know, take your x-rays, put your phone number on there, you know, take your mobile phone charger, take some coins, take a nightie that opens at the front, you know, a pyjama that opens at the front, because, you know, when a doctor does his rounds, it's, you know, trying to get an nightie off is more difficult than this
exactly.
way. So it's all those practical tips that get people ready for that, you know, awful hospital experience, and then getting them ready for the next appointment, which is, you know, really the hardest appointment that I find. People are so nervous waiting to get there, almost their sentence, I call it, in the book. You know, to say, has it spread? Has it gone any further?
On Life Matters today, my guest is Professor John Boyages. He's a specialist with more than 25 years' experience in diagnosing and treating breast cancer. Is it in the book, Breast Cancer, Taking Control, which traverses some of the issues that women facing breast cancer deal with. One of the big decisions that women have to make, of course, is about mastectomy or breast conservation.
Mm.
What are the factors that they should be considering?
Well, the factors are, I find I call them patient tumour and treatment factors. The patient factors are, look, if a woman feels just more comfortable with a mastectomy, and she's always, she may live in the country and can't be bothered coming to the big smoke, or her mum had a mastectomy, he's alive 20 years later.
Yeah.
I don't think it's our right to push them into breast conservation. So that's what I call their choice. Or it may be tumour factors if it's involved in two parts of the breast, then it's easy, it's better to have a mastectomy. Or if it's a big cancer, it's better to have a mastectomy. So they're the sort of factors that I look at. And there's a lot of grey zones in this. Sometimes we can shrink the tumour first with chemo. If someone is very young and motivated to keep her breast and her cancer still quite large and she's got a smaller breast, sometimes we can shrink it down with some chemotherapy first. So it's not black and white, but there's a list of what I call the absolute indications for a mastectomy in the book, so people are clear what I think it is.
Okay, so what are the numbers? What are the reoccurrence rates with mastectomy and breast conservation?
Well, the recurrence rates, believe it or not, are identical. And there's no difference in cure rates between...
Because right. People wouldn't think that, would they?
No. And there's 10 trials which have compared breast conservation with mastectomy. And I've summarised it here in a flowchart because people say, okay, if you have a mastectomy, you have less recurrence. But they're looking at it up here. But if you look at the final outcome, it's identical. So it gets back to how big your breast is, how big the tumour is, what you're most comfortable with. And, you know, sometimes I've got this lovely story of, you know, one of my dear patients is called May, and she's one of the patients who agreed to put a face in it. And she's a 90-year-old lady who came to see me. She saw our surgeon first and she saw me. The surgeon wanted to do a mastectomy, which is the right treatment for someone who's 90,
yeah,
because, you know, who's fit, because sometimes it just gets out of the way, don't have to come for daily radiotherapy and so on. And I said, May, what do you do with yourself? And she said, I'm a tap dancer. I dance for old people. And I said, well, your breasts are pretty important to you then. She goes, you bet they are. So I went and spoke to her and I said, look, you know, what about we just give a tablet for this lady?
Yeah.
And then she is there on page 257. And I saw her just before I went away. I see her every 6 months, and she's now 99.
Well, hey.
And, you know, we both have birthdays in August. She's going to celebrate 100th next year. And,
wow.
And, you know, so it's about finding, you know, it's about finding the right treatment for the right person.
The thing that struck me in the book is that you do communicate risk very well, and most of us are not good at understanding risk. And it's a pity, because in this circumstance, you need a fairly good understanding of risk to help you decide what treatment program to pursue. The book makes it clearer, but many of us are not going to have that benefit.
That's right. And I find that sometimes doctors magnify risk. They may do it because they're listing a whole list of complications to protect themselves from perceived medico-legal risks. Sometimes they're not trained how to communicate risk. Sometimes they use negative risk rather than positive risk. They might say, look, there's a, you know, 15% of recurrence sounds far worse to me than an 85% chance of survival.
Yes, yes.
It's the same thing, but it's how you frame the words. And a doctor rang me up and said, can you send your book? It was in, you know, early stages to a good friend of hers in Los Angeles, And turned out to be a professor of psychology who wrote an endorsement for the book. And she said, you know what, the best part of it about your book is I've suddenly understood risk, and I could go into American doctors and can, take them on about risks. And, you know, she wrote to me recently and said, John, you know, I sent her a copy of the book. She said, you don't have to send me a copy of the book. You've saved my life. I said, what? I thought, I was sort of stunned at that. And I thought, but risk, it's such an important question. How do you communicate risk?
John, there's a lot in it, including some really interesting and helpful things on, like, how to find a good surgeon, that sort of thing. But thank you very much for joining us
today. Thank you very much.
That's Professor John Boyages. He's a specialist, as I mentioned, more than 25 years' experience in diagnosing and treating breast cancer. He's actually director at the New South Wales Breast Cancer Institute at Westmead Hospital in Sydney at the moment. He's in Oxford. He's not there today. Obviously, he's with me. And his new book is called Breast Cancer, Taking Control. And you'll find more details on the Life Matters website. That, of course, is abc.net.au/rn/Life Matters.